Listen to this. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved. And she said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went towards the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed, for as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. And the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. And as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? For whom are you looking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabuni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." And Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said all these things to her. Yes, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. When I was a child, Easter morning always began in the dark. Easter began when my father quietly tapped on my bedroom door. "Psst, Chris, do you still want to go?" Seemed like I had shut my eyes only moments before. How could it already be time to get up? When I was a child, Easter began when my bare feet hit that cold wooden floor of my bedroom. We usually rode to the church in sheer silence. There's not much to say at that hour in the morning. We always parked in the dark, empty lot of Vandalia Presbyterian Church, and we made our way out to the lawn, where without speaking, we began moving metal folding chairs, all churches have them, into position. When I was a child, Easter began in the darkness and the quiet of that empty lawn before sunrise, as human-shaped shadows began to speak in the whispers of pre-dawn. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, a woman walks to the graveyard. Of all the gospel writers, John is most clear about when Mary got up that morning. It was still dark. The sun had not yet risen to shed light on the situation at the tomb. It was still dark as Mary approached the final resting place of Jesus. And that darkness was more than physical. Mary was shadowed in grief, surrounded by the fog of painful loss, the gloom of faded hope. The humble teacher, the powerful healer, the dear friend who had given her reason to believe was gone. The bright light of his life extinguished on a Roman cross. Death had defeated him. And with him, the possibility of a radically new dawn. There was nothing to do that morning in the dark but try to go on, to go back, to return to normal. Unable to sleep, she rose in the darkness and the quiet, too quiet, too dark. She stood outside the tomb. And she wept. She was weeping, sobbing, grieving the unthinkable loss, too much darkness, too much quiet. Now, we who worship on this bright, beautiful morning, we know what happens next because John gives us all the information we need. It is the first day of the week. The day of resurrection. We know that life has already begun to stir in the darkness before sunrise. We know what happens next, but Mary could not see it, not in the dark. It was Easter, but she was still living in Good Friday. And I think we know exactly what that means and how that feels. I think at one level, this is why we gather this morning. We know all about Good Friday this year. We have seen enough of death to know its power. We have experienced enough of suffering to know it is real. We need no refresher course on the truth of tragedy or the fact of human finitude. We know the graveyard. We too have gotten out of bed before sunrise, overcome by a painfully unresolved past or an unshakable fear for the future. You know the graveyard. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're frantically searching medical websites, not really wanting to find what you will read there. It's the middle of the night and you're replaying the scenes of an angry outburst you wish you could rewind and reverse. It's way too early and you find yourself overcome by the absence of one whose life was once knitted to yours. You lie awake at night worried about aging parents who can no longer care for themselves or children who can't seem to find their way back home again. Uncertainty about your life's purpose keeps you from restful sleep or concern over the state of the world. You're struggling to hold on to a relationship that has lost the fire that once warmed your heart. You're wondering what the future looks like for you. You know the graveyard. We know Good Friday. If you are living in the haze of darkness, those hours before dawn are the longest and the slowest of the day. Of course, we try our best to avoid them. We try meditation. We try medication. We change our diet or our routine. Last month, I had my annual physical. Okay, it had been 5 years. And after examination and inquiring a bit about my sleep patterns, the doctor gently asked if perhaps I'd been under a lot of stress at work. We looked at each other above our masks, and then we both started laughing out loud. I said, 9 hours every night. How about you, Doc? Stress swells in the dark, doesn't it? We fill our homes with artificial light that keeps darkness away and noise machines that cover the uncomfortable silence. I remember when our son Samuel was 2, every single night when I flipped the switch to turn out the light in his nursery, he would say from the crib, "Uh-oh." Yes, darkness can be hard to handle at any age. I read this week of churches that began their Easter services on Thursday or Friday night. Why dwell in the darkness when you can turn on the lights, turn up the volume, and forget it ever happened at all? Why? Because the gospel witness could not be clearer on this matter. Darkness is the place where Easter begins. Only in the dark can the first flickers of light be seen. Barbara Brown Taylor writes, whether it is a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, new life always starts in the dark. We don't like that. We can't do much in the dark. Our human limitations are made clear when the lights go out. Uh-oh. But this day is about God's power, not our weakness. This is the day when we worship the God who shines the light of light even in the deepest darkness. This morning, all we need to do is show up and let God in. Hear this, Easter is encounter. John tells his story in 2 parts. In part 1, there is frenetic running back and forth to and from the tomb. Mary discovers the stone has been moved, and she sprints to tell Peter and John. Peter and John literally race each other to the tomb. They discover that it is empty, then they run back to their homes. In this first section, there's a lot of action, but not much understanding. Indeed, no one says anything about resurrection. Their concerns are more practical. The body of Jesus is missing. It may have been stolen. First century Jewish custom was to anoint the body for burial, but Jesus' death just before the Sabbath has interrupted the tradition. Mary is weeping with grief, fear, surely exhaustion, as she returns to the tomb a second time. Even the presence of 2 brightly attired angels cannot snap her out of the Friday funk. They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him. It is then that the miraculous events that first began in the dark are finally illumined. Jesus is there. Now, she doesn't know it's Jesus. She thinks he is the gardener and asks him where the body is. I love that. I love that Jesus is not glowing with resurrection light, that he has no halo, no choirs of angels surround him. As Frederick Buechner writes, when the writers of the Gospels come to the most important part of the story, they tell it in whispers. There in the garden, I like to imagine that Jesus whispers her name, "Psst, Mary." And in that moment, she knows. She just knows. Easter dawns, the light shines, the impossible has happened, and now anything is possible. Mary has missed so many signs of resurrection that morning. A stone rolled back. Who could have done that? An empty tomb, angelic messengers, even Jesus himself. She missed it all, and who could blame her? It's still dark. Hard to see. But when she hears her name, everything changes for Mary. The message of resurrection did not come in earth-shaking thunder. It was not written in the stars or shouted from the mountaintop. It came in a simple word whispered in truth and in love. Mary. And isn't this what we all want? To hear our name spoken in truth and in love. Isn't this what gives us the courage to face those darkest hours, knowing that we are not alone in them, trusting that we are loved beyond measure despite them? If you have ever heard your name spoken with unconditional love, then you know what happened to Mary in the garden at sunrise on the first day of the week. This is the moment that Mary lets God in, and everything is suddenly radiant. This is the moment that her faith is formed, her life is changed, and she is made the first preacher of the gospel. I have seen the Lord, an Easter sermon in 5 words. I have seen the Lord. But first, I heard him speak my name. And what about you? Have you heard your name? Have you seen the Lord? Because if you have, God's got some work for you to do. You see, the truth of Easter does not hinge on our intellectual assent to the theological doctrine of the bodily resurrection. This day does not depend on our attempts to explain it. Easter, remember, is encounter. Encounter with the risen Lord who speaks your name in love. Encounters with fellow travelers created in the image of God. You see, too many still live in Good Friday gloom. Too many are still cast aside, left behind, kept down, shoved out. Too many have relinquished what was left of faith. Too many have given up hope. Too many fallen prey to cynical doomsday predictions of a world beyond redemption. Too many have not yet seen the sunrise. Too many are living in the dark before dawn. And if you have seen the Lord, you know better. If you have seen the Lord, you know better. If you have seen the Lord, you cannot be silent. If you have seen the Lord, if you have heard your name spoken in love, the voice of the one who claims you now calls you to a new way of life, to a different level of commitment, to a deeper degree of compassion. There is something so personal about Easter. There is something so personal about hearing your name. There is something so personal about hearing a knock at the door. There is something personal about letting God's love wash over you, about opening that door and letting God in. You see, we cannot love in the abstract. We cannot love ideas. We only love people with names and faces and stories. And that is how we are loved, not in theory, but by name. Not in general, but in relationship. Easter is encounter, and encounter alters everything. All week long, I've been thinking about Lois Quist. Lois was a 50-year member of the congregation I served in Atlanta. She was a woman of profound and serious faith, the consummate church lady. If Lois was traveling and missed a Sunday service, without fail, a bulletin from the church she attended would appear in my mail slot as soon as she returned. She was that kind of woman. Each year, on the day before Easter, Lois and her husband Ken would show up in our driveway with a buttercream frosted cake, almost as big as Lois. If we happened to be away, they would leave the cake on top of our car so we didn't miss it. They did this year after year. And then in the fall of 2016, Ken died after a short illness, and Lois began to slow down. She missed Sundays, and no bulletin appeared in my mail slot. Her health declined, but her spirit stayed strong, and about once a month, a handwritten note would arrive in my mailbox. Easter of 2018 was one of my final Sundays serving that congregation. Lois had been in the hospital, but I knew she was back home, and so I tried to call her on the day before Easter. There was no answer at home. Later that afternoon, I was in the backyard with Samuel when I heard a voice, clearly weakened but persistent nonetheless. "Psst, Chris." I turned around to see Lois Quist. She motioned for me to come out to the driveway where her son was waiting in the car. She had me open the back door, and yes, there on the back seat was our Easter cake. Lois smiled. "I didn't want you to think I forgot what day it was." It was the last time I saw her. She died that October. But every year on the day before Easter, I think of Lois. Lois, who knew that the resurrection of Jesus Christ called for celebration, who preached Easter sermons in cakes frosted with buttercream. Beloved, today we proclaim the final defeat of death and of all its corrosive effects on how we live. Today we announce the victory of God, the relentless promise of unending life, and maybe today you are prepared to encounter the risen Christ, to bake a cake, to join the celebration. But there is also a chance that this Easter Sunday is just another day drenched in darkness for you. Perhaps the promised new life has not yet whispered your name. If this is where you find yourself this morning, then I have good news for you. You are exactly where you are meant to be. You see, Easter always begins in the dark. You have already done the only thing you need to do. You showed up. You put aside your reservations, your regrets, your shame, your cynicism, your fear. Now, listen for the voice of love whispering your name. Psst. Mary. Open your heart. And let God in. Amen.